The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show where every day and every episode, we want you to write your own personal prescription for power. That's right, your Power RX. And today, I'm trying to conceal my excitement because I have with me Dr. Evan Alexander, whose original book, The Proof of Life, I read years ago. I read it when I was back in medical school, I think, and was so touched and so inspired by what was in that book. So it's such an honor and such a treat today to bring him onto my show and let you guys benefit from his wisdom and his knowledge. If you don't know Dr. Alexander, he's a pioneering scientist and thought leader in consciousness studies. He has been a guest on Dr. Oz, Oprah, and many other media programs. His most recent book, which I also have, Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Heart of Consciousness, co-authored with Karen Newell, has garnered accolades from many scientists around the world who study the mind-body question and the nature of consciousness. His earlier books are Proof of Heaven, my favorite, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife, and The Map of Heaven, How Science, Religion, and Ordinary People Are Proving the Afterlife. He has collectively spent more than 2 years atop the New York Times and international bestseller list. Welcome to the show, Dr. Alexander.
Well, thanks for having me, Dr. Taz. It's great to be here.
Well, I am so happy you're here, and I have a little bit of a celebrity sort of thing going on with you right now, so I will try to control that and get the information out there. You wrote Living in a Mindful Universe. This is now your third book. Talk to us about what that means to you and how living in a mindful universe is applicable to all of us sort of walking around in our daily lives.
Well, I think it's important to point out when you have a near-death experience like I had almost 10 years ago now due to severe bacterial meningitis, it definitely kicks your kind of life into a new orbit. But in many ways, it also often presents more question marks than answers because it's such an exotic form of existence and reality compared to our normal waking reality. It's kind of hard to make sense of it. But as a scientist, having spent those first 54 years of my life honing my scientific worldview, I had to make sense of it in a scientific setting. And so I look at the book Proof of Heaven more as a question mark. It simply says, oh, my God, these experiences are real. They're far richer and more profound than I ever would have dreamed before. And, of course, as I read the near-death experience literature, I began to realize we're all going to a similar place, and it's a similar journey. And so this is really my attempt, Living in a Mindful Universe is my attempt to get this understanding out. And it really has to do with a fundamental change in our worldview and in our scientific understanding of the nature of reality and of the relationship between mind and brain. But it is well worth doing because the kind of world that we glimpse in Living in a Mindful Universe is one that, for which everyone can be very optimistic, which really returns the free will of the higher soul and kind of the evolutionary purpose of consciousness right back to the forefront in our understanding. So this book was just kind of a necessary step for the scientific mind in terms of a much deeper understanding. And I would say that Living in a Mindful Universe is therefore probably the most ambitious book I'm aware of that tries to re-wed science and spirituality.
Which I think in itself is such a fascinating topic. I talk so much all the time and even in practice about how there is a science, a chemistry to our spirituality. When we don't have things lined up, we can't exude and be the best that we're supposed to be. We can't be the highest, serve kind of our highest calling, so to speak. But for everybody out there who doesn't know Dr. Alexander as well as I do, or at least his work, Proof of Heaven was his first book. And I almost see these books on a spectrum, Proof of Heaven, Map of Heaven, Living in a Mindful Universe. Maybe just fill our audience in very quickly on what you learned through your experience of having meningitis, having a near-death experience, and how that has shifted over the years and landed you here with Living in a Mindful Universe. Maybe give us just a little bit of background.
Well, I had started my life, as I said earlier, more than half a century honing a scientific worldview that was very much steeped in our conventional kind of what's called reductive materialism. That's our conventional public version of science that's presented to the masses. And the problem with that view, it can be termed what's called physicalism or materialism, which is the notion that only the physical world exists, that there is nothing else necessary to explain all causality and reality. Now, part of that assumption of physicalism is that the brain obviously must be creating consciousness out of purely physical matter, because if there is nothing else, then we must be using the brain to somehow generate consciousness. The only problem is no neuroscientist on Earth or philosopher of mind has ever had the remotest clue how the brain might create consciousness. And the reason is it doesn't. That is a big error in our kind of assumptions. And this was shown to be very clearly with my meningitis, because as my the human part of my brain, the neocortex, the outer surface of the brain, was being devoured by this extremely aggressive bacterial meningoencephalitis, my conscious awareness actually became far richer and grander. And I went through multiple realms that I described, beginning with the earthworm's eye view, very primitive, coarse, unresponsive realm. But I was then welcomed through this portal of pure light and of melody, of music, up into a brilliant, ultra-real gateway valley. And, of course, I described so much of that in proof of heaven. The most important things to point out is in that gateway valley, there are many Earth-like features, and there were butterflies and plants and flowers and blossoms and all these souls between lives dancing down below. But there were also very deep spiritual features, like all the festivities I witnessed were being driven by angelic choirs up above, these swooping orbs of golden light leaving sparkling trails. And all of that was in the backdrop of this beautiful girl on the butterfly wing, who I think gave me the central messages of the journey. And I would say they're the central message of the book Proof of Heaven for all of humanity, and that is you are deeply loved and cherished forever. You have nothing to fear. You will be taken care of. It acknowledges there's nothing to fear about death of the physical body. But another crucial ingredient that was very clear to me during that journey, but I'd never entertained before, was the fact that reincarnation is absolutely essential. You cannot make sense of any of this if you're stuck in the falsehood of believing that we have one incarnation to go all the way from, you know, nascent soul all the way to a fully advanced spiritual being if we can accomplish that in one incarnation. And the fact is that we cannot. So it's a beautiful journey of discovery, but it unfolds through multiple acts of returning to this world. And we're doing that in a sense where we have consciousness that is not simply owned by the self. In other words, the materialist model would try and say that your consciousness is created within your mind and it's yours alone and that's all there is to it. Whereas modern consciousness studies and quantum physics both suggest very strongly that there really is one consciousness, and we're really all sharing that. It's not just about humans. It's about not even limited to just life on Earth, but this one consciousness is what is filtered in by the brain. And so, in fact, living in mindful universe is an extrapolation of modern scientific thinking that is bringing all of this together by knowing the oneness of consciousness, that we all share that, that we're all here for a similar purpose of evolving the knowledge of that consciousness. And we clarify all of this in a much richer fashion in Living in Mindful Universe. It's basically a complete soup to nuts kind of notion of how to put all this together in a metaphysical worldview that actually accommodates all of human experience.
So I have Living in a Mindful Universe right on my nightstand, and I'm reading it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think for the listener out there, the way I would almost visualize what Dr. Alexander is talking about is almost see consciousness as a whole. It's almost like a whole. It's a whole puzzle. It's a whole pie, however you want to see it, but it's a whole. We're all in it, but then our interpretation of it may change. Is that essentially what you're saying? Is that the depending on our chemistry and what our brain is doing at a given moment, our interpretation of that one fundamental truth, consciousness, of that one fundamental experience, which it sounds like is love, that then is reinterpreted, reproduced, twisted, changed by us individually. Is that correct?
Well, I would say in essence, you're on the right pathway. This is about the evolution of consciousness. It's about learning. We're all here to learn and teach and come to a deeper understanding of the nature of this universe. And of course, that means especially our relationship with that universe. We really all have a very direct connection with that one mind. And this is really just a different way of looking at the brain. The brain is not the producer of consciousness in some little isolated, self-exiled fashion, but in fact is a reducing valve or filter that allows that primordial consciousness in. And this is where I think it gets much more exciting. But the overall purpose for this existence, for this thing we call Soul School, is really for the expansion of knowledge and understanding, you know, of who we are, why we're here, where this is all going, and most especially, what is that intimate connection between us and the creative force of this universe. And that's where living in a mindful universe goes so far in trying to take modern quantum physics and our wrestling with the measurement paradox in quantum physics and putting it together with all these various forms of human experience, like telepathy and remote viewing and out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, shared death experiences, past life memories in children indicative of reincarnation, precognition, all these incredible examples of non-local consciousness and the power of mind, including placebo effect, because that's probably one of the most accepted examples of mind over matter in our modern scientific world. And yet it's one that scientists and physicians often don't realize completely debunks our typical materialist model, that it's all just molecular medicine and all of that. So it's a much bigger field of operation for understanding, but it's one that's very liberating for human beings.
More with my guest coming up, but right now I want to tell you about Grove Collaborative, products for a beautiful and healthy home. You guys have heard me talk about your toxic load and how important it is to pay attention to what we're using on our bodies and in our home. It directly impacts our health. Grove Collaborative makes it easy to discover amazing natural home and personal care products. Grove selects only the best non-toxic products so you can shop with confidence, knowing that everything on their site is good for you, your family, and the planet. I want you to try Grove Collaborative. So right now, when you spend $20 or more on your first order, you'll get a free $30 Mrs. Meyers kit, plus a bonus gift, plus a free 2-month VIP trial membership. The bonus gift is a tea towel. Go to grove.co/wholehealth to claim your special offer. That's grove.co, not grove.com, grove.co/wholehealth to get the special offer. So many questions. I'm going to start with one that I know my listeners want me to ask. It is, where, if you think about consciousness this way, what, and you think about reincarnation as well, where does that put God? Where does that put religion? Where is there scientific evidence for some of this stuff? Help us with that.
Okay, well, first of all, every bit of what I'm talking about and every bit of what we cover in Living in a Mindful Universe is part of natural science. We're not talking about supernatural, but we are admitting that there's no way out of the fact that we're spiritual beings living in a spiritual universe. And the quote that I think really drives this home is from the 1932 Nobel Prize winner in physics, Werner Heisenberg, one of the founding fathers of quantum physics, who said that the first glass from the natural sciences, from the glass of the natural sciences, will lead you to atheism, but at the bottom of the glass, God awaits you. And what he really meant by this was, yes, if you study materialism and the natural science of kind of Newtonian limited determinism, you start moving away from God. But as soon as you start realizing the quantum nature of the universe and the lengths to which the physics community has to go to try and explain the results of their experiments in a way that avoids consciousness and spirituality and kind of that God force, they have to go all the way to what's called the many worlds interpretation, infinite parallel universes, to bypass the fact that was obvious to most of the founding fathers of quantum physics, like Werner Heisenberg, Wolfgang Pauli, Dirac, Louis de Broglie, Erwin Schrodinger, and others, who basically recognize that quantum experiments show us that consciousness is fundamental in the universe. And we take that lead in our book, Living in a Mindful Universe, and just say, well, what if they're trying to tell us exactly where to go with this? Because modern science has never truly been able to go there. The measurement paradox in quantum physics remains very much unresolved in the minds of physicists. And yet by putting consciousness as fundamental as we do in our book, you start to realize how we really live in a mental universe, and that all of this apparent objective physical universe emerges out of consciousness itself. And this is so contrary to our conventional scientific materialism that it's been a very difficult pill to swallow. But
Definitely.
That is also why the physics community has struggled intensely with the measurement paradox in quantum physics for more than 80 years and been unable to come up with any answer. It's because the answer actually violates one of their premises, which is you cannot default to any kind of, you know, God consciousness or intelligent force behind the workings of the universe. But I think anyone who studies this universe realize there's a tremendous amount of intelligence that must be involved in its design. We make those points extensively in Living in a Mindful Universe. They have to do with the fine-tuning of the physical constants of all of the parameters that make up our physical universe, and the absolute success of the formulas of mathematics to describe this world. All of those are clues as to the intelligent nature underlying our universe, and human consciousness is not separate from that mind that is co-creating all that evolves. So this is just a much bigger theater of operations that tries to bring science and spirituality together, fully acknowledges the power of that intelligence, but also, just as I pointed out in Proof of Heaven, realizes that the force that binds our consciousness together is one of love, and that unconditional love has infinite power to heal. That's a lesson that so many near-death experiencers bring back to this world, and certainly it's a big part of my message, is that we are all bound together in this one mind through that power of love, and that therefore the way out of the world's problems right now is really very simply of showing more compassion, kindness, forgiveness, acceptance, and mercy to all fellow beings. That's an ancient lesson, but it's kind of written into the fabric of this scientific discovery of the deep nature of consciousness and relationship of brain and mind, is that power of love to take us towards healing, that is becoming more whole, more complete, who we are here to be.
Amazing. And, you know, if you don't remember anything, listeners, from today's episode, I would say that is the takeaway, that, you know, as you start to understand the power of consciousness and what it really is, it's that uniting force of love, which can present in so many ways as compassion, as kindness, as forgiveness, as, you know, collaboration, so many different things that will ultimately push us all forward. And that ultimately is, I think, our soul's highest purpose. I'm curious, I know we're going to get short on time here, but I still want to talk about reincarnation and the proof of that and what the naysayers. I mean, we've got some strong religious traditions that are against reincarnation and others that are for it. What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, my standpoint on it all is really based in science.
Mm-hmm.
As a scientist, that's what I have to defer to all the time. And before my coma, I had no idea there was a rich scientific literature on reincarnation. I'd never paid any attention to it. The main reason, of course, is that my theoretical model of materialism, you know, the physical world is all that exists, the brain creates consciousness, would not allow for any kind of memory or intelligence of experience to come through into a new incarnation, into a new brain. So I dismissed it all because it didn't fit my little fictional model of the way the world should work. Well, turns out since the 1960s, Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia began studying cases in children. He was a psychiatrist, and he would get calls from children who claimed, you know, families who claimed their children had memories of a past life. So mm-hmm. he investigated them, obviously expecting back in the 60s that he would debunk them and that would be the end of it. But he couldn't, because more and more of these cases started cropping up where the best explanation seemed to be one of actual reincarnation. That work has continued to this day under Dr. Jim Tucker. And if you go to uvadops.org, you can get all of their research right there for your own use. Bottom line is they've now uncovered more than 2,700 cases of past life memories in children where the best explanation is one of reincarnation. They've taken great lengths to avoid any kind of fraud or deception, any kind of confusion based on the family's reports, and have a large number of cases. Now, Strikingly, in something like 35% of those more than 2,700 cases, the children have a birthmark, physical birthmark, that corresponds with the mortal injury of their previous life. And this could even be, say, an entry and an exit gunshot wound, where the child now has a birthmark corresponding to those wounds from a previous existence. Now, when you go through this material and read the work, it's so stunning, you know, and yet they have to be very careful scientifically. And although people have tried to debunk it and dismiss it, by and large, the body of evidence is so strong and compelling from numerous compassionate scientists who have been very deeply involved, and very skeptical scientists, I will add, that you really cannot deny the reality of reincarnation. It's absolutely solid as a rock. Now, from religious systems, of course, I grew up in a Methodist church in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I was not taught about reincarnation there. But important to point out, I've come to realize that reincarnation is certainly accepted by many of the world's great faiths, and it's also part of original Christianity. It turns out that it was made heretical, punishable by death, by Constantine. And, you know, centuries after Christ, what they realized of the Romans, who were basically trying to guide Christianity and take advantage of it, use it for power, decided that that was far too liberating a concept. And even though Christ spoke easily of reincarnation, for example, in talking of John the Baptist being a reincarnated prophet from earlier times. So the notion was fine with him, but it was forbidden centuries later in Orthodox Christianity. So don't lose sight of the fact that original Christianity plus many other great faiths of today fully accept reincarnation. And with a scientific basis, I mean, really, let's just get with the program. We have to start understanding how this works. But as from my point of view, it's crystal clear that reincarnation is a very real effect, and we need to understand how to make better sense of it all.
Amazing, and it really shifts, I know, for so many people, kind of turns things upside down for them in terms of how they think about the world and think about God and think about their existence. What does this mean for medicine, Dr. Alexander, for healers, for physicians, for diseases? How do you see all of this playing into it? I can infer a little, like if we understand that we're protected and that we understand love is the ultimate unifying power, there's tremendous power right there. But what do you see the implications for the field of medicine and for physicians?
Well, let's get right down to something that is scientifically much more accepted and utilized in industrial fashion, and that is the placebo effect. Placebo effect has been around for thousands of years. It was first acknowledged in the medical profession in the 1950s, and then it became the standard, the gold standard, for any new treatment, for the scientific investigation of a new drug or many new procedures, had to be compared against placebo. And the reason for this is because physicians realize that if a patient is taking a sugar pill or something that they believe will make them better, depending on the symptoms, the circumstances, the disease, the syndrome, what have you, that basically about 30% of the benefit of any treatment comes from the patient believing they can get better. Now, this does not just apply in cases of headache or chest pain, but even in cases of advanced cancers or infectious diseases that we normally think would be fatal, there are examples of kind of a what we in Western medicine call miraculous healing that often simply seems to be due to the patient's belief that they can get better. In near-death experiences, you run into this in spades, like my complete resolution after a week-long coma due to gram-negative bacterial meningitis. You don't find cases like that in the medical literature. You can't even do the stats on it. It's so rare to have a full recovery. Likewise with Anita Morjani and Dying to Be Me and her advanced lymphoma, going into a hospital in deep coma at advanced stages, only hours to live. That was in February 2006. She had a profound near-death experience, came back to this world knowing the cancer would disappear, and it did. She's perfectly healthy today. So anyway, in near-death experiences, you run into these miraculous healings. Placebo effect shows that mind over matter is the way the universe really works. This is kind of the revolution that we're pointing out in living in a mindful universe, is that we do live in a mental universe. The objective physical universe is all a projection out of the mental. And so our mind has far more power over our emerging reality than we might believe. And all of this ultimately is rooted in healing. And when I say healing, that means becoming more whole, more complete, more who we came here to be. And what I've come to realize is that we all have tremendous power over our health and the health of loved ones as we learn more to investigate deep into consciousness and explore that. For me, this has led to expanding my notions of centering prayer to a form of deep meditation, where I use the tools developed by Sacred Acoustics. People who want to learn more can go to sacredacoustics.com. But I've used those meditative techniques of differential sound frequency brain entrainment daily for the last 7 years to get deep into my NDE, to return to those realms, to develop my relationships there, and to help in my own ongoing healing and becoming more complete. So I would say that for the seekers out there, it all involves just developing a daily pattern of meditation, of going within, coming to realize the little voice in our head, you know, the voice of our ego, that is not our consciousness. That is little more than a parlor trick. Our consciousness is our awareness. It's the awareness of existence. And that is the what one can develop by going within. It's a much broader relationship to that universal mind. As I said earlier, the given that the brain is not the producer of consciousness, but it's only a reducing valve or filter that allows primordial consciousness in, as we get into meditation, we learn it's really a way of exploring that universal mind and coming to know ourselves and our relationship with the universe much more richly through meditation itself. And all of that involves healing, becoming more whole.
I love it. And meditation is so powerful. It's something that even I try to stay consistent with day to day. Beyond meditation, or aside from meditation, Dr. Alexander, are there other tools you would recommend that the listeners look into when they're trying to delve into the world of consciousness, when they're trying to maintain their own spiritual health?
Well, I think the most important thing is to have a regular practice of going within. You know, there's plenty to learn and read and study about all of this. And for suggestions about that, I think people could start at ebenalexander.com. That's ebenalexander.com. And I have a reading list there and other resources available. Of course, in addition to the book Living in a Mindful Universe, we also have a companion kind of email course that goes along with that that's completely free. So I would encourage your listeners to go take part in that 33-day email course. All they have to do is go to ebenalexander.com. When you're there, there's a little banner that wiggles in your face saying your 33-day journey into the heart of consciousness. You just leave your first name and an email address there, and we send you an email every day for 33 days. With each one contains a major concept out of the new book, as well as a practical tool and some guidance for how to use it in your meditative practice. And I would say that that 33-day course can give you a tremendous amount of kind of heads up and advanced knowledge of how to proceed forward with more in-depth investigation. And of course, the book Living in a Mindful Universe can take you much further, but you don't have to put up a penny. All you have to do is go to that 33-day email course, and you can get a very powerful start into every bit of this. The only other piece of advice is for people to get the meditative tools directly, go right to sacredacoustics.com. Karen Newell has some instructional videos on that website that are all free and are very, very good information for how to take on your own personal journey as a seeker.
Oh my goodness, so much great information, great advice. It's mind over matter, the power of consciousness. For everybody listening today, I hope you're able to grasp and grab all the great information and tools here. If you do want to go deeper, again, the book is Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Heart of Consciousness, and the website is ebenalexander.com. Dr. Alexander, it's been an honor. It's been a privilege. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know everyone's going to benefit from this as I have myself. And I will continue to read your book. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr. Taz. Great talking with you, and hope to talk again soon.
Thank you. Take care.